Before I get started, I wanted to make sure that I gave a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind body coach based out of Los Angeles. You might actually remember that she guest hosted my podcast back in January and came on live with me from the garage gym in August of 2021. Jeannie facilitates breath work to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Are you having trouble calming the monkey mind? You see, she knows all about that. It's not about controlling or managing your stress or your thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. Jeannie spent over 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. However, she healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. Are you feeling stuck lately? Here's a reframe. You see, you're not stuck. You've got stuck energy. You want to shift and move that? Well, visit jeanniecolwin.com. That's JeannieColwin.com for instant access to her free recorded confidence-boosting breathwork mini session so you can do just that. Welcome back to the podcast for Thursday, July the 21st, 2022. Let me make sure that I give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. If you are enjoying the content of this show and you feel compelled to help out monetarily, make sure that you go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast to help us out, help keep the lights on. Let me give a shout out to Kirk, Patricia, and Emily, Brent, Paul, Amanda, Elise, Enda, Dominic, Sasha, Sylvie, James, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Anthony, Christina, Ross, Julie, Brian, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Again, patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast if you want to help support. Okay, today's interview comes to us all the way from the United Kingdom, tucked in between Manchester and Liverpool. Jason Shires jumps on with me, kind of hear about his story. I've had, over the last 5 years, there's people that are in different camps on this podcast and how they overcame their symptoms. And I think that's a really interesting thing to observe. It's kind of like the Sarno approach, the Ozanich approach, the Nicole Sachs approach. And then there's the breath approach, parasympathetic, sympathetic balance. And then there's this kind of newer-ish, even though it's been around for a long time, three principles understanding approach. And there's quietly becoming more and more people on this podcast that have sort of become awaken a little bit, I might go on to say. It's a really amazing story. Jason is a tremendous storyteller. I think you're really going to enjoy this. So let's take a listen to Jason and I. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I love the fact that this is a global show. Most of the people that I interview are in the United States, at least North America. But then occasionally I do get the person from overseas, and that's the case today. So I have in between Manchester and Liverpool in the UK is Jason Shires. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did. Thank you.
Awesome. Jason, thanks so much for being here. Just to give some context kind of on how it is that I came across you, there was a thread that was on Hannah Studley's Facebook group about the three principles. Somebody, Tara Smith, she's a friend of the show, she's been interviewed before, she had this post. She goes, "Hello, my name is Tara and I'm addicted to thinking." And then you had this comment that really struck me. I just thought it was so interesting, and that's what we're going to dive into. So let me read the quote. You said, "Me too, for 40 years to the point of eating out of bins, starving myself for days, taking PEDs, having 7 cosmetic operations to change my body, binge eating, then going to the gym for hours. I could go on and on with the crazy story. And then one day, it all changed, and I've been free ever since then. No need for psychiatric intervention, no need for more 12 steps, no need for therapy, no tapping, EMDR, no trauma therapy, no finding myself in India or Nepal, no CBT. I saw the story running in my own mind. was not who I was, and I was free. And I was just like, man, that is a quote for the ages. So, I'm not really sure where to start with your story. Maybe we'll kind of go backwards a little bit. Tell us a little bit about you today. Just, you know, the things you're into, what it is you do for work, if you care to share that, you know, that kind of stuff. And then we can go backwards a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I'm a coach. I have a coaching practice, and also I have a digital marketing business as well. And I help healthcare related brands, usually large addiction treatment organizations. I've somehow ended up in this, opening this business in the flow of life, you know, just kind of following where life was guiding me. I'd always worked in marketing as well as being a therapist before I found this kind of understanding where I'm at now. So it was like a meeting of two careers, I guess, the digital marketing thing, where I ended up working for an addiction treatment company in the UK. And then I left there, and then I opened my own business as an agency. And I'm kind of in one or two, or I just show up at my desk and I see what the next thing to do is, you know. It's like that, you know. I'm either got a coaching client or a digital marketing strategy to create, or something for a business. So yeah, it's quite fun, to be honest, my life compared to what it was. That's a big contrast for sure.
Maybe there's something to this, but I'm in sales and marketing, and one of my first guests on the show, longtime pain recovery guy, based out of Australia, also a sales and marketing guy. You, sales and marketing guy, what is it? Is there something to that?
I don't know. It's kind of like, it was like I had this like two need, you know, like one was like my passion for addiction treatment, where there didn't seem to be a lot of money unless you were a big sort of, unless you had a lot to invest in getting out there. And the digital marketing was my technically challenged mind. You know, I love to sort of get into working things out and finding out how things work and helping people get connected. It was like a way of service, in a way of, you know, particularly in the healthcare, like helping people find good services that they, I mean, I only really take clients on that I believe in what they're doing, making a difference in the world. And it was really helping people find those great services, you know, like, and sort of being of service in that way.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely a fan of that. I mean, that's kind of why I do the podcast. It doesn't pay the bills. It's not the day job, but it's something that I do have a passion for, that I'm incredibly indebted to this kind of stuff and being able to spread the word a little bit as much as I can. Well, let's go back to the statement. I mean, talk about some of the body stuff. And for people that don't know, you had said taking PEDs, performance enhancing drugs, unless you're talking about something else.
No, you got it right.
Okay. Yeah. So talk about some of that stuff, the body related stuff.
Yeah. I mean, my story is mixed in with all sorts of other criminal lifestyle and drugs and jails and institutions and psychiatric stuff. But food was the very first drug for me. Like at the loss of my dad when I was just 5 years old, he was killed in an accident. He went out one day and he didn't come back, basically. You know, the police came to the door and there was this tragic situation and horrific situation, you know, where I was kind of thrown into where my dad was gone, basically. And nobody knew how to cope with that. Everyone just coped in the best way they could, I guess. And food became my unknowingly, completely unconsciously, you know, food became my escapism, my way of coping, you know. So I ballooned in weight, and then, you know, from there, ballooning in weight, stealing food, you know, and having a lot of arguments and about who had eaten certain things in the house as a kid, you know, is what I remember. And then to stealing money, you know, and eating, and then referral into the psychiatric services at 9 years old, put on medication, antidepressants at 9 years old. And you know, that threw me into a lifetime of, you know, of psychiatric treatment. And from there on, you know, drugs were like in my addiction, in my drug addiction, you know, which lasted perhaps 10 years, started at a very early teenager, 13, 14 years old with heroin. Not your traditional route to drug addiction, but it's just the way it went for me. But like, drugs were the escape, you know, and food obviously became secondary at that point. Like, drugs was the primary thing. And I was quite quickly into, I'd already been committing crime as before I ever found drugs, stealing from home, stealing from buildings, stealing cars and trashing them, all sorts of crazy stuff. I was completely off the wall. You know, I just would do anything to escape. So food came secondary, but it still never went away. You know, it was like, I remember I used to go out and I used to commit crime and I used to go and buy drugs and I'd go home and I'd take the heroin and I'd then go out and shoplift chocolate, you know, and food and sandwiches and all sorts of things from food shops. And I'd come home and line up all this food and whatever it was and then binge out on it, you know, until the next day. And it was always like that. If I could get drugs and I could feel okay, then I would go and get food, you know. And yeah. Every time I went to jail, I was so fat, you know, I was massively overweight. And people would look at me and go, you're not a drug addict. You know, it's kind of like, you're too fat, you know. And it was quite a harsh environment in jail. And, you know, so I wasn't, you know, I can't remember what I thought of that, but that's just how it was, you know. And I'd come out of jail fitting into my clothes a little bit better, you know, because I couldn't get the things that I needed and, you know, away from drugs. And then I'd just decide that I was going to do it again one more time and go back, then get a life, you know. But, you know, as anyone who's experienced some sort of addiction will know that that one more time never ends, you right. know. So it just went through me back into the vicious cycle. And, you know, going back to the food thing, it's like when I finally got clean, I was 23, and that'll be 28 years this year. And like the first thing that happened was I stopped taking drugs in rehab when I went to rehab, and it's like the food just became the next thing again, because this is what happens with addiction. You just replace one addiction with another,
right?
You know, it's like in traditional treatments, it's like, okay, yeah, I stopped taking drugs because I'm beaten, you know, but I'm not going to stop stuffing my face with cakes and chocolates and watching pornography and gambling my money away. It's like, it's just like one thing to another, you know? So I came out of, in treatment, I was in treatment for 12 weeks and I gained 7 stone, which would be about 100 pounds in US weight, you know, in 12 weeks, because, you know, I stole every single bit of food I could get. I ate out of bins. I would, between the kitchen and the dining room, like I would take the food in the lift between the kitchen and the dining room, and I would eat everything that was left over from people's plates at the end. I would do anything, like, to just, it was just really like an unconscious binge, you know, like completely oblivious, just eating everything. And I would spot any food, anything that was edible in the kitchen, you know, and then at the night when the chefs and the kitchen staff weren't there, I would sneak down to the dining room and steal the food and then smuggle it up to my room in the rehab and sit in there, you know, eating on the food. So it pretty much was, you know, it was massive. I guess at that point I was 350 pounds, you know, like by the time I had kind of come out of rehabilitation.
And how just for some context, how tall are you? What's your height?
178
centimeters.
Yeah, 178 centimeters. Okay. 5'11". Yeah. I was massively overweight. I mean, I didn't have any clothes to fit me. I had to buy, you know, like special, you know, elasticated clothes and stuff. You know, I couldn't get anything to fit me. I felt really uncomfortable in my own skin. I felt kind of very alone, you know, but it was like, I was okay because I wasn't using drugs, right? I mean, that's the way everyone put it.
Yeah.
Now that I was around, it's okay. As long as you don't take drugs, you're okay. It's like I started my, you know, quote unquote recovery, you know, from drug addiction. But like what happened was it just became this internal struggle with myself and food and relationships, you know. So that's when I got into all the PEDs and other stuff, like trying to change my body on the outside. I was absolutely obsessed. Like I was going to meetings, 12-step meetings, saying my life was great because I wasn't using drugs, and that was kind of the way it was meant to be. But actually I was in such an inner turmoil, such a desperate and empty way inside of me, that I really would do anything to change. And I had this crazy vicious cycle where I would get into a toxic relationship. It would be, you know, and I would desperately be trying to change myself to be more accepted, to be more loved, to be more attractive to the person I was with. But I could never get that there, even though I kept trying. And then the relationship would end. I would overeat, ballooning weight, and go back into the gym and try, you know, like trying everything and anything, like with hours and hours in the gym and taking caffeine and pre-workouts and all sorts of stuff, trying so I could spend longer and longer and longer in the gym, but yet still overeating. So it was like putting my body through so much.
You know what you're describing, maybe we'll get into this, because I don't know if there's any sort of an accompaniment of pain recovery or anything like that, that meaning like physical pain recovery, and if there is, we certainly could get to that. But there's been kind of a popular element or talking point on this show in the past couple of years in this phenomenon that is quite common, called the symptom imperative. And it's exactly what you're talking about. And usually in that world, basically you're exchanging one symptom for another. So you have back pain that goes on forever, and then you kind of, and usually it'll be like you go to physical therapy or you have a surgery or something. That pain problem is solved, but then you're just subbing it for another problem. And that's kind of what the equivalent is that you're describing.
Yeah, I have that story too. That's how I met Hannah, you know, but like, you know, I certainly have that story of a spontaneous, like including in that quote that you read out, I could have added a spontaneous recovery from 20 years of debilitating back pain and struggles, you know, and pain medication and all sorts of stuff. I could have added that to that quote. I just didn't come to mind at the time, but yeah, I have that too, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about that stuff. Cause I kind of want to round all of this out. And obviously the, how did you get over it part, but you've got a pain recovery story or a pain story. I'm curious to hear about that. And if those kinds of symptoms occurred before everything you just talked about, or if they were after everything you just talked about.
Yeah, I kind of remember actually where it started. You know, I remember in one of those obsessive gym times, you know, thought I'd hurt my back, and I lived in the south of England, and there was a college called the Anglo College of Chiropractors or something. I went there, I remember, and I must have been maybe 25 years old, I guess. And it's like, that was the start of my journey with chiropractors and physios and MRI scanners, you know, for my back. And I had a legitimate 6 herniated discs, you know, is where it ended up, and a degenerative disc. And so I had the physical diagnosis, you know, and it's like, and I would go through these periods of having, alongside all the other stuff that was happening, you know, at the same time. So it was like having these struggles with addiction, struggles with myself, like a constant existential crisis, feeling separate from the world and kind of wondering who I was and struggling with addictions, relationships, all sorts of stuff. And this experience of chronic pain that lasted 20 years, you know, where I had multiple MRI scans in multiple countries. And, you know, pain medication pretty much went everywhere with me. And I used to, it was bad. Like, I would describe myself a bit like Spider-Man, because I couldn't even get to the toilet without wall walking sometimes.
Wow.
You know, it was like I'd be literally crawling along the wall, like too scared to actually move because of the pain. When they said 10 out of 10, how's the pain? I'd be like, well, it's about 100. You know, it's kind of like... And I had the physical diagnosis to go with it. So I was convinced it was a physical issue. You know, I was convinced that this was, well, I've got the MRI scans that show the herniated disc. So surely there's something physically wrong with me, you know?
Yeah.
And I found a way of medicating, living, escaping from that pain story, along with trying to manage all the other stuff, you know, but, as you said, you know, as I read out, I had multiple, over these 20 years that I had the pain, I also had many cosmetic surgeries trying to change my physical, my skin was stretched from the obesity. And, you know, after I lost some weight, I would then try and get the skin rectified, having multiple surgeries. I had surgeries in different countries because of cost effectiveness and different types of surgeries, different surgeons, all trying to find happiness. You know, it's like, it's really important to point to what I see that all this is about. You know, this is the symptom. These are all the things that happened, you know, and they're all the result of a misunderstanding. But like, you know, the way that I lived, you know, it was just manage, you know, some sort of attempt at managing my experience, some sort of attempt at dealing with the external manifestation of an internal misunderstanding, you know.
Gosh, like what? So I wrote that down. You said all of these in trying to find happiness, which I think is really powerful. And I've got a brother that I'm estranged from, not kind of, but I'm estranged from, who had addiction issues and has addiction issues all throughout his life. And it did certainly seem like that. Like, if I can just do this, I'll be happy. If I can just get this, I'll be happy. And then that happiness never actually comes. Well, so you said then one day, and it sounds sort of cavalier, but I'm curious about, was this a slow burn or was it really just this intense new understanding? You said, and then one day it all changed and I've been free ever since. Talk about that. If it truly was one day, talk about that day.
Yeah, it was a couple, it was 2 days maybe, but yeah, but like, it's interesting just to context that, you know, before, like you said, it's kind of like, there was a period where there was a time when I lost 150 pounds in weight. And I guess I was like 25, 26. It was just after I'd got clean, a couple of years after I got clean, and I lost 150 pounds. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror one day going, I'm still miserable and I'm still fat, you know? And it's like, at this point I was 180 pounds. So it's kind of, I'd gone from 350 down to 180 in the space of 9 months. And I looked at myself in the mirror one day and said, nothing has changed. You know, this is not what I thought it would be. And it's like, I knew then that it wasn't an external thing, yet I carried on doing it, you know, trying to find happiness outside of myself.
Yeah.
Now, fast forward to that experience, you know, I was 22 years in recovery in 12 steps. I've been a psychotherapist for more than a decade, perhaps two. You know, I've got multiple qualifications in psychodynamic and CBT and person-centered therapy and NLP. And, you know, I'd been in recovery 22 years doing 12-step things, and I was still miserable, you know, and I was still searching. And it's funny, either serendipitous or, you know, beyond coincidence, that I'd been to Tony Robbins. I did all of Tony Robbins' events. I'd been to the Hoffman Process. I'd done Landmark Forum. I'd done silent meditations. I'd been in therapy for at least 10 years. While I trained as a therapist, and after that, been with the same therapist for many years. And I'd somehow come across this, someone had given me, funnily enough, a login to Hay House. And I'd looked in Hay House to see what there was. And there was this video called The Path of Effortless Change. And my life had just seemed like a real effort. You know, it felt very heavy and very difficult. And like everything was a challenge. And even though I'd got all these therapy qualifications and opened a practice and worked with people for many years, nothing seemed simple, everything. And I could say that I wasn't happy. So I was really curious about this word effortless, you know, and it's like, for some reason, it really spoke to me. I thought, I'm going to have to get this video to share it with people. And I couldn't find a way to download this video to share it with people. So I had to watch it. It was the only way I could do it, was screen recording this course of Michael Neal's called The Path of Effortless Change. And I just found myself mesmerized by whatever it was. It was speaking to my soul, I would say now, you know, like back then I had no clue, but I was just mesmerized and I couldn't even, the words weren't making sense, but there was something I was feeling and experiencing when I was listening. And
how many years ago was this?
5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. Keep going. Yeah.
And you know, after that, I kind of just knew, I had a sense of kind of like, there's something more for me to see here. And, you know, a bit of time passed, but I ended up going to LA to Michael's house to do an intensive with him. And at that point, my life still felt like I was spinning plates. It still felt like a management of symptoms and trying to get the outside okay to feel okay on the inside. It was really like this juggling spinning plates experience, you know, the health plate, the relationship plate, the weight loss plate. It was still playing out the relationship, you know, at that point, the weight loss stuff at that point, and the compulsive eating and the chronic pain, you know, that was another one. So when I went to Michael's, I spent 2 days there, and those were the 2 days that changed, you know, everything changed. And you know, I went in there with this idea of myself, with this idea thinking I know, because I did, well, I had a lot of qualifications and a lot of letters after my name and a lot of years of practice and working with people. So I kind of went in there with this attitude and, I know a lot about change and I know how change works. So I don't know what this guy's going to teach me, but I'm here now. So
yeah,
I may as well listen. And he just said to me one day, he just, like at the start, he said, Can you just be here? Can you just listen beyond whether this is not whether this is right or wrong, or not whether this is like something you know, or not whether it's good or bad. You know, it's kind of like, and not about getting your money's worth. You know, it's like, can you just be here? And I'd never had the invitation to be present before. No one had ever invited me just to be in the moment. You know, I'd never, that's just not something that was done in psychotherapy training. And for some reason, you know, that time I just went, okay. And I put my notebook down and I was willing to just listen. And, you know, and I, over those couple of days, I couldn't really tell you much about what was said. I remember a few of the conversations, but what I noticed was that after 2 days was I went and sat in this Airbnb where I was, and there was this kind of bench swing at the back, and it was over this, there was a green sort of valley fields at the back. And I remember sitting there with this complete calm, you know, absolutely. And I knew, like, that I, bear in mind, I'd spent over 40 years searching with eating disorders, psychiatric care and everything. And I'd been seeking and searching for something my whole life. I just knew that it was that done. I knew there was no more searching. I kind of felt this such a level of calm. And my mind was going, well, you haven't got more money. You've not lost weight. You haven't got a new relationship. You know, it's like nothing has actually changed, you know, on the outside. And, you know, the experience of feeling completely at peace, you know, and that was the start of the dominoes falling, you know, my practice and my stuff about addiction and my chronic pain story. You know, it's kind of like, it was literally like dominoes falling. Every place I looked, I just started to see the misunderstanding. Now, if you want, I can talk about what I saw.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to ask, because I think there was a story that I told about 3 months ago. I had kind of a similar experience, and I talked to Hannah not long after this, that I was having like a really rough, I had had like a pretty significant relapse, the most significant relapse I'd had in 5 years. And it had gone on for a couple of months almost. And I was sitting at a baseball game, about 3 months ago. And, there was just kind of this moment where, kind of as you describe, that sort of everything went silent. I'm in this loud baseball stadium. It's sold out. There's, I don't know, 55,000 people there probably. And everything just seemed silent. And it was like I was watching myself in this seat, and I was hearing like a really just very light breeze almost. And I just kind of had this discussion internally with myself where it was like, you're trying to control everything. And really, like, there is nothing to control. And in that moment, the relapse disappeared, completely disappeared. And I would qualify that as a misunderstanding internally. So I want to hear a little bit more about yours. What did you see, or what did you observe?
Yeah. Like, particularly because I'd been in the psychological field for such a long time and had so many like qualifications, like I really believed in addiction and trauma as a real thing that was never overcome. And that because I'd been in 12 steps for 22 years saying, my name's Jason, I'm an addict. It's kind of like, I saw the make-believe of the story. I saw that like there was a movie playing in my mind, which I was the lead character, you know, and I'd been overly identified with that story, like every single day, and perpetuated by all these things that I'd done in the wrong direction, you know, like, because now I'd often do presentations and stuff. And I talk about, you know, like the perpetuating sort of experience of going into traditional therapies or the psychiatric world. It's like, I'd gone to these people, they'd innocently confirmed there was something wrong with me. And I bought into that story along with my own mental creation, thought created creation of myself. And then I'd escaped from the story that I'd created on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a victim I was hard done to. I'd been gifted this, you know, this terrible experience, tragic loss. And, you know, and I was broken and damaged, and I was, you know, under the psychiatric treatment, and I would never get well. And I had childhood trauma, and I was an addict, and I was always going to be an addict. And, you know, all these things that I'd been told over the years by well-meaning, you know, innocent. And I don't mean this, there's no maliciousness that I see in my past. You know, it's like people who had tried to help me all innocently added to the story that I was creating on a daily basis. Now it's like the whole thing just fell apart. I just saw that there was no me. There was no me as I knew it. There was no the story was just a story. It was just a thought-based creation in my own mind. And like, it wasn't true. None of it was true. Like right now, right this moment, it was okay.
Yeah.
Everything was okay. Like I had in that moment when I was sat on that bench swing, it was like, right now, everything is okay. And right now, everything is always okay. And then I get lost in my mind again. And it's like, it comes back. And I saw that all the suffering was thought created. And I saw that all the escapism was to try and offset the thoughts that I just believed about myself, you know, like, and it was like, and all those things, I thought, there's a few things that were really prominent to me. And this is how clear it is. I always say to people, when you've had some sort of awakening or realization experience, you don't need to ask someone else, right, whether it was an awakening, because there's a palpable, noticeable change in your life. And it's like, I phoned my therapist of 7 years and I said, next session will be our last session. I don't need psychotherapy anymore after 7 years. I didn't go back to meetings. I haven't been back to meetings since. And I've never been back for psychiatric care. And, you know, my life has got like unrecognizably better. My relationships have changed. And the chronic pain part of it was that, like, perhaps a few months after that, I joined Supercoach Academy with Michael Neal, and I was in Prague at the end of the 6 months training. And like they said, is anybody willing to stand up and talk about what they've got out of this course? Now, this was nothing to do with chronic pain, but like I said, yeah, I'll do it. So I stood up, and as I stood up, I thought, shit, I haven't got any tablets with me. You know, it's kind of like, and I thought, and come to think of it, I've been here a week and I haven't even thought about tablets. And yeah. I had never gone anywhere without a codeine-based painkiller in my bag, at least. You know, it's kind of like not for years. And
it's kind of like this. It's like the security blanket.
Yeah. And as I started talking, I said, you know, funnily enough, I said, I've been under physios and I've got MRI scans with, you know, like six herniated discs. And I said, I haven't even thought about pain medication for like nearly 6 months. And I've actually forgotten the fact that I had a bad back. And it's like, and I just realized it all came to me in that moment. I thought, I've come away without pain medication. I can't even remember the last time my back hurt. And it's like, and I feel free. And to this day now, that's like I said, 5 or 6 years ago, it's been the case. It's never changed. You know, it's like every now and again, I have a little twinge or I feel a bit twisted, but I just know there's nothing I need to do because I live a pretty stress-free life now. And I realize the connection between stress and, you know, and the release of cortisol and inflammation in the body and so on, and how it affects, translates into the physical experience.
So at that point, like when you do get a swinge, you feel twisted or whatever, you know what it is. Is there any sort of action taken or it's just let it be?
Yeah. I don't try and fix it and I don't want to go to see anyone. I don't want to phone my friend up to talk about it because it's like, I realize that in the human experience, we have moment, you know, we get caught up and from time to time and it's a bit of a roller coaster. Sometimes we have moments of stress, worry, you know, it's kind of like, well, we forget who we are, you know, and then we get caught up in it and then we come back, you know. That's the guarantee. The knowing is that there's a natural equilibrium, you know, in the design. So it's like, there's nothing to do, you know, and the knowing that there's nothing to do is kind of like, is what stops me from ever needing to do anything about it or thinking that there's a deeper problem going on here. It's like, oh, I got caught. Again, in the human experience, like, it'll pass. That's the guarantee, right? I mean, change is the only guarantee that's been happening since the world started every single day. And, you know, and that's what the human experience is. It's a roller coaster. It's good and bad. You know, we get caught off guard. We get stressy moments or things, challenges in life to deal with, but we always return back to that natural equilibrium. So, yeah, sometimes it makes sense to lie on the floor. You know, sometimes it makes sense not to sit a certain way on a sofa. Or sometimes it makes sense to, you know, just to take it easy or something. But I have the natural wisdom that is built into the design of the human system is just always there to listen to, you know. And that's kind of the way I see it now. You know, it's not that I'm, 100% pain free. I've got, I have got herniated discs really. And it's like every now and again, they play up a little bit, but I certainly don't can jump on a plane without worrying about pain medication or even thinking about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's tremendous. There's a lot of people listening to this that they're stuck in one way or another. And I hear from them all the time, that they just continue to have these pervasive symptoms. It's still this tremendous big part of their life. They're still avoiding doing things. You know, they're still not booking out vacations because they don't know how they're going to feel on that particular day. I guess with everything that you've been through, and kind of everything you've experienced, and then kind of have it all, not necessarily have it all amount to nothing, but it's a misunderstanding. I mean, it very much is it is what it is kind of thing. What would you say to them, or what do you say to them?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I caveat this with the fact that this is really just my intellectual understanding, and it's no use, and it's perhaps even frustrating for somebody to hear that is struggling with chronic pain, you know. It's kind of like, but I always say to people, you know, I don't want to convince you that this is how it works, but I just want you to look for yourself, you know. I want people to look for themselves and see within themselves. But, you know, like what we're experiencing and the perpetuation of the physical symptom is created by a thought, is created by the mind. I mean, you may have even noticed this, you know, sometimes I would wake up and before I'd even moved, you know, it's kind of like my mind was going, oh my God, just be careful when you move, you know, mm-hmm. it's like you're bad, you've got to be. And it's kind of all, it's like we're thinking about chronic pain, we're thinking about suffering, we're thinking about struggling, you know, it's like we're holding the story of the pain. And it's difficult to see when there is a physical diagnosis as well, because there often is the connection between the cortisol and the inflammation, you know, it's created via the mind, you know, via the mind's stressy thoughts that we take seriously, and the actual physical feeling that we get, you know. But everything is experienced via thought. All sensations are experienced via thought. The body is experienced via thought, by the mind. And that's what we're dealing with, you know. There's always a perception of that, and we're always listening to our thought-based story. It's the same way that I spontaneously recovered from all those years of that craziness was from an insight, mm-hmm. you know, an insight into seeing the true nature of our experience and how the whole human experience works. You know, we're all playing the lead character of the movie, playing in our own mind, and we're all creating that movie as we go along. You know, it could be it could be somebody with chronic pain. In the movie, it could be someone with trauma, it could be someone with addiction. You know, it could be someone who's been hard done to, who's had tragedy, who's had loss, who's had terminal illness. It could be whatever it is, you know. It's like, and then we're responding and feeling as a result to the movie that's playing in our mind. And it's like, there's no movie in the present moment, you know. There's just now. It's just here and now, the calmness, the good feeling, everything that we ever wanted, you know. Often as well, to add to this, you know, like people with chronic pain story and addictions and eating disorders like me, you know, it's kind of like you said, you know, the story with your brother, you know, it's kind of like every day we think, oh, if I could just get rid of this, or if I could just get my back better, or if I could just get more money, I think just have a better relationship, I could just lose weight, you know. That's why I did so many surgeries, thinking that it was the answer.
Yeah.
If I could just, and then insert whatever thing it is that looks like the solution, you know, it's kind of like, so that actually just automatically puts us in a place of victim, you know. It's kind of like, I'm here and I want to be there. And if I was there, I would be okay, meaning I'm not okay now, you know. It's like, And like we're living in that story the whole time, and like all you have to see, I mean, it's simple, but it's simple, but it's not easy, you know. When you see the story, and I don't want to say it's just thought, because like saying it's just nuclear energy, you know, that blows up worlds. It's like it's the most powerful experience for any human being, you know. It's not just thought, but it is just thought, you know. And I always ask clients, you know, like, does a fish know it's swimming in water? You know, it's like if a fish is born in the water, never leaves the water, you know, it's like, does it know it's in water?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's like humans, you know, do we know we're living in a world of thought, you know, and there is something beyond that, you know, there is a space, a present moment space beyond that. And often, you know, human beings, they born and they die asleep, you know, they never see the human experience for the truth of what it is, you know, and that's kind of, it's simple to explain in that way, but it's probably frustrating, you know, to anyone suffering. If you would have told me that when I was suffering, I would have gone, yeah, you're crazy. You know, I've got a real MRI scan here that will show you that there's really something wrong with me. But until we start to see the mind-body connection and how that works, you know, it's often that we're just dealing with the physical at all times on the level of the physical, you know?
If you don't mind, there's a video clip that, I mean, it sounds just like what it is that you're talking about that I would love to play and I'd love for you to listen to. It's 4 minutes and 20 seconds long, and it's a Jim Carrey, Alan Watts dub. But it talks about this under the surface, playing a character, that kind of thing. Because I just keep hearing quotes out of that that are reminding me of what you're saying. Do you mind if I play this and we can listen to it together?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me, I'm sure there's going to be a YouTube ad. Let me... There's going to be an ad on YouTube, but let me actually get to the real video and then I'll start it. Okay. I'm going to lay out here and let's listen to this, and I'll be back in 4 minutes and 19 seconds.
Sounds
good. All right. Hang tight. Listen to this.
I used to be a guy who was experiencing the world, and now I feel like...
Can you hear that?
No, it's really quiet. I got my volume on full too.
You know what? Are you on a computer or a phone?
Yeah, I'm on a computer.
So just because it sounds so sloppy to do this on while we're actually here's what I want you to do. If you could, I'm sending this link to you. I want you to try and play it because I think since you're on computer audio, I think if you play it, I'll be able to hear it. So let's give that a shot.
Let me show you one of my favorite things about Monday.com. CRM.
Yeah, I can hear it perfectly. So skip that ad whenever you can, and then we'll listen to it.
I used to be a guy who was experiencing the world, and now I feel like the world and the universe experiencing a guy.
When the curtain goes down at the end of the drama, the hero and the villain step out hand in hand, and the audience applaud both. Because they know that the hero role and the villain role are only masks.
As an actor, you play characters, and then if you go deep enough into those characters, you realize that your own character is pretty thin to begin with, you know? And then you suddenly have this separation and go, who's Jim Carrey? Oh, he doesn't exist, actually.
And at a certain point, I realized, hey, wait a second, you know, if it's so easy to lose Jim Carrey, who the hell is Jim Carrey?
There's just a relative manifestation of consciousness appearing, and then somebody gave him a bunch of ideas. They gave him a name and a religion and a nationality, and he clustered those together into something that's supposed to be a personality. And it doesn't actually exist. And none of that stuff, if you drill down, is real.
And so you see behind the stage, too, there is the green room, where after the play is over and before it begins, the masks are taken off.
Dressing happens, doing hair happens, interviewing happens, and it happens without me, without the idea of a me.
You know, it's really, you know, the fact that we're already enlightened, we're already complete, and it's just realizing that you're complete. Once you realize you're complete, then this life and everything in it becomes a play of form, something to toy with and play with and make something good out of.
It's what's happening right now inside everybody is they're going, who am I? And they're depressed, you know, a lot of people, because they're trying to hold up an image in the world. And that's what depression is. You know, people go like, oh, Jim's been depressed and stuff. Well, yeah, I was depressed when I was trying to be the Wizard of Oz instead of the sweaty guy behind the curtain. But now I know that Oz is a character, you know? Everybody walks around and they go like, why am I depressed? Well, it's because you're trying to be something for the world, you know? And as soon as you, let that go, better things happen because they're just happening. And there's been a series of kind of awakenings I've had in my life. And, people chalk it up to depression and all that stuff. I think that, grief and sadness and all those things are the ticket home to nothing. I think that was a part of the process. There's been several other awakenings and yet still I have a lot of egoic attachments that pull my attention and focus. I think, the right marriage with the right character and the right guy who's going through something is essential.
And so that behind the scene, that is to say in reality, under the surface, you are all the actor. Marvelously skilled in playing many parts and in getting lost in the mazes of your own minds and the entanglements of your own affairs, as if this were the most urgent thing going. But behind the scenes, in the green room, you always have a very tiny sneaking suspicion that you might not be the you that you think you are.
Wow.
I mean, it sounds like what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. I noted down a few things that resonated with me, and I do like Alan Watts. I've also listened to Alan Watts. Like everyone's going around asking themselves, who are we? Who am I? It's kind of like when he talked about that, and really, if you cut me open, there's no character, there's no personality, but like there's so much emphasis. We're conditioned. We've heard things. We listen to social media videos, YouTube, and parental influence, societal influence, cultural influence. It's like we're born as a completely innocent, seamless flow of sensations and perceptions, as a baby. And we, like Jim Carrey said in that video, we're giving a name and then we're given a religion and a nationality. And it's like we start to learn the idea of separateness, and what they're talking about in the video is the oneness, that we are the same noticer of the experience, that we are universal consciousness having an experience as a human. And, we've learned the idea of separation in society and, through our culture, through our conditioning. And as we go on, it seems like that we've got to better this individual separate me that I call Jason, that seems to have a character and personality, to get somewhere, to get status, to get better, to get physically better, to get better relationships, to get more money, bigger cars, bigger houses. It's kind of like in order to succeed in this thing that we call being human. But actually, like Jim Carrey talked about, you're just playing the character, and it's like so who are you beyond the character? Who are we when we see that all that separateness is really the creation, the innocent creation of the mind in the way that we've been taught and conditioned, And one thing that they said that really stood out to me was like that grief and sadness, is the ticket, and I would add that grief and sadness and addiction and chronic pain is the ticket to awakening to the truth of who you are. That's what it is. It is a gift to be able to, I call addiction the lost man's way to enlightenment, because it is, and I talk about my tragedy in that way that still can feel sad. It's kind of like that all this thing was in service of me seeing beyond this separate entity that I call Jason in the world and seeing the bigger picture of life, seeing the bigger picture of the human experience, the oneness of everything, like the space beyond thought, beyond the character that's playing in the movie in my own mind. When I put that aside, then what is there? I'm not the actor, I'm just the noticer of the experience. And that's kind of what I got out of it, and those are the things that I noted down that really stood out. Yeah, and it's exactly the same as what I'm saying. Jim Carrey and Alan Watts definitely talk about the same thing. There's multiple ways of pointing, but we're all pointing to the same place, I think.
Yeah, I forgot what I think you just did. You just say The Observer? Is that what you said? So I call it the song has nothing to do with it, but there's a Dr. Dre song called The Watcher, and it has nothing to do with this concept at all. But that's just what I've called it for quite some time now, is these concepts that, you know, you don't need to be the participant, you don't need to be the star, you don't need to be in the middle. You can just be the watcher, and really that's a big anecdote to all of this. So, Jason, this has been tremendous. Thank you so much for coming on, and I feel like your story and the way that you tell it and your dialect and all that, it's intoxicating, to be honest. So so thank you so much for being on, and hang on for a second once the interview ends. But thanks for coming on and doing this interview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I hope, I always do these things, you know, a lot of the time, just in the hope that one person hears something that might make them, you know, I always ask people, just reflect, don't listen to my words, but just really reflect on your own experience and how this fits, you know, and kind of in the hope that it'll make a difference to anyone who's suffering or struggling, you know, so that would be my wish. You know?
Awesome. All right, Jason, like I said, hang out for a second, but thanks so much for coming on and doing this interview from halfway across the world.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.